Welcome to Chromatic Elephant, a podcast about race, trauma, and the impact of white body supremacy. Here are your hosts, Tyler Reitzner and Resma Menakem.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Chromatic Elephant, where we bring the elephant in the room. My name is Tyler Reitzner.
Resma Menakem, good to be with you, man.
Good to be with you, too. Very happy to be talking today. I'm happy is the right word. Actually, today what we're going to be talking about in this episode is, Your Grandmother's KKK. And that's because we're going to talk a little bit about some of the history behind female involvement in the KKK in the 1920s, even through the 50s. And still to this day, don't get me wrong, there's just there's a deeper history than I think we're than we talk about, that's for sure. And so we wanted to bring it out into the consciousness today, and also talk about use this article. The article is in it's published in Medium, and it is by Laura Smith. And we will have this article. It's called "The KKK Started a Branch Just for Women in the 1920s, and 500,000 Joined." So 500,000 white middle class affluent women joined the Ku Klux Klan, and were actually a very important played a very important role in the organization of the Ku Klux Klan. And had their own branch of it. So if you're interested in the article and what we're going to be talking about today, if you want to look it up, it will be on our website in the resources page, and it will be directly connected to our this episode, just like all of our other episodes and all of our other articles. Yeah. And I got to tell you, this one was really difficult for me. And when I talk about difficulty on this show, and one of the things I'm hoping we can talk about and kind of walk through a little bit is the idea of what somatic is.
That's right.
And how this stuff lives in our bodies. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. I'm not talking about knowing whether this stuff is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Of course, I know it's wrong. But it goes against my values, goes against my beliefs.
Right.
There's nothing about the KKK that I'm like on board with.
That's right.
Consciously.
Right.
What I notice is the rationalization pieces that happen and that immediately start to make me uncomfortable. Like as I'm reading this article, because of the first picture that's in there, it was almost like I had to read it 3 or 4 times to actually read the words.
That's right.
Because I kept thinking about my grandmother.
That's exactly right.
That picture looks like pictures from my grandmother used to show me of her childhood. Not my grandmother was in the KKK, These are white women from the 20s through the 50s wearing the same clothes that my grandmother wore, the same hairstyles and the same glasses. It was really, and I have a close relationship. I had a close relationship with my grandmother. So this was extremely difficult for me. And from a somatic point of view, I had a hard time absorbing the information because it was so uncomfortable. It hit so close to home. And then when I actually did absorb what they were talking about, it made sense to me because that's what these women were used to do. They were used to diffuse the brutality and make it seem more, and they were really, really effective at it.
That's right.
Make it seem more like we're trying to uphold values.
Exactly.
We're trying to uphold culture.
Exactly right.
And so it wasn't so much that this was linked to my grandmother. It was linked to something even deeper in me from a cultural standpoint.
That's it.
That made it very difficult. And that's the stuff, quite frankly, that we talk about the time
that's
in here.
Right.
And so that's really for me what, like the subject matter of this article didn't hit me as much as the impact of the white body supremacy in me was activated.
That's right. You know, the idea that there was for that there at its at its roots, the idea of the WKKK actually be, I sent you this article recently, but I actually read this article maybe about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And there's a book that actually, there's a woman who wrote a book that's associated with the article.
It's referenced in the article. Yeah.
Absolutely. And she takes, I ordered the book. She had, you think the three or four pictures you saw in there,
mm-hmm.
it's the book is just littered with pictures,
yeah.
Right? And the thing about the WKKK is that it was seen as the softer side of the KKK,
mm-hmm.
Right? The thing I appreciate about the article is that it didn't talk about the article in the classic class ways, right?
Yeah.
So when we think about the KKK, we think about, you know, rural Alabama, blah 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 blah,
trailer park, poor white folks.
That's not what this was. This was all of the classes, middle classes primarily, that were engaged in things like bake sales, women's auxiliary, church gatherings, right?
Yep.
So the KKK was the notions of weaving white body supremacy and with daily cultural activities is what the whole thing was about. And many times and they used, you know, women, you know, doing the right thing and women being part of this, the whole idea of how feminism was also woven into this piece in terms of their duty, in terms of what they should be doing. All of that was woven into the cultural aspects. And so when you said to me earlier, look, it took me a minute to even land when I started reading this, because that looked like my grandma. That's what somatics is about, right? Cultural somatics really is about slowing down enough to realize that all of the things that your brain and your body does to get you around it as a white body is actually supported by the very structure of this country, mm-hmm. right? And so you having this experience like, wait a minute, I want to push this away. I don't know really what this has to do with anything, is actually the somatic experience,
yep.
Right? And so often when we're talking about cultural somatics, many times people want, or somatic abolitionism, many times people want to think about it as, I had hatred when it showed up, or I had this, you know, these kind of really like big emotional things. And what I try and tell people is, no, it's when your body is reached a level where you automatically try and push something off because it's too hard to hold it.
Yep.
And so when you said to me, man, those pictures look like pictures that my grandma had, that's exactly the effect that it should have, right? That this wasn't just about those women.
Yeah.
This was about white women and how those pieces got soaked into the very structures of the religion, of the governmental pieces, of the social pieces as culture, right?
Yep.
So,
well, and that's, you know, so it, and it's really for me, and I try to talk on this show as much as I can about how this stuff flashes.
Yes.
That initial flash.
That's a good word.
You know what I mean?
That's
like, because, and that's a word that I've learned through trauma work.
That's right.
And so, yeah, that like instant protection flash nope, this isn't.
That's right.
Nope. And that's what happened when I started reading this. I saw those pictures. And what it reminded me of is like pictures of like women's groups
that's
my grandmother had the 50s
that's
and things
right.
like that.
That's right.
Except these women were all wearing white KKK robes
that's
and
right.
hoods.
That's right.
And I'm just. Like it wasn't
for
computing for me.
That's
like,
right.
You know,
for that particular time, though.
Yeah.
But many times those women did not wear the hoods
when
they were doing all of these auxiliary things, right? Yeah.
But that's what made it so.
Yeah.
Because it was so in your face. Like,
that's right.
Yes, these are the same women
that's
doing
right.
these things
that's
in church groups.
That's exactly it.
Also wearing white hoods, like that did not, it was not comfortable. It didn't make sense to me. It, like it literally, and when I say that, I mean, that's that first flash that like, oh, this isn't landing. What? This doesn't, no. And and I've learned like that first instinct doesn't come to me through just like, I don't recognize that without doing work, right? Like, I don't recognize that without doing the trauma work that I've done to understand my body and figure out, okay, what is happening? Why am I having these protective reactions to something? Because that's what that is. It's a protective reaction to information that I feel like is going to be painful and uncomfortable.
It will be.
But it's like that. Taking, as you talk, you know, you talk about the reps. That's when that hit me is like, I'm sitting there going, okay, hang in there. Try to read through this. And it took me a few times to read through because my mind would start going.
This
is what I'd be like thinking about my grandma, thinking about oatmeal cookies. And like I'd have to like through like, no, this is too uncomfortable. I got to think about something pleasant. It hits so personally to me. And then as I'm reading, I find out, oh, that's really what they were trying. That's why they wanted these women to get involved. That's what made these women so effective at what they were doing. They had that nurturing kind of aura that they then used to, you know, instill the idea of white supremacy and white body supremacy as culture.
As culture. That's the piece.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are surprised. I'm a riff off of this other piece too.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people surprised that there was actually a American Nazi Party.
Yeah, I don't know why they'd be. That's very well documented.
That's right. But a lot of people have not heard of that. They seriously, and you can pull up videos and everything right now. The American Nazi Party. I mean, there were they had large scale marches.
Yeah.
All over the country.
They had a massive rally at Madison Square Garden.
Right? Not the Nazi Party. The American Nazi Party. Right? And so these kind of streams have always been there, right? And they're supported. And the thing that I always think about is, of these women, how many of these women, so let's say there was 500,000, right? How many of these women were clerks or secretaries or supported husbands who were judges and sheriffs and deacons in churches and military people and scientists? And you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I think about how, so when we think about people, we don't necessarily think about their ties to institutions and their influence in those institutions. We just go, oh, that was just 500,000 women that were just, you know, it's no big deal. Those 500,000 women had babies. Those 500,000 women had husbands and lovers and people that they were connected to and institutions that they were connected to. The American Nazi Party wasn't there were large numbers of people that were, those people were morticians. Those people were, you understand?
Police officers.
Police officers.
Firemen.
Right.
All of these.
The whole nine. Yep. And so for me, that's what was interesting about this article, was how she did a good job of not letting, in my opinion, not letting white people off the hook with regard to and particularly white women, and particularly middle class white women, because middle class white liberal women a lot of times want to act like they didn't come from middle class women of the KKK. That you know what I mean? That a daughter born to a woman that you don't know, she was part of that auxiliary or was influenced by the women that were part of that auxiliary, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of what's right, what's standard, what is human.
Yeah.
And not just teaching it in terms of, and this is one of the things I'm very clear about, is that when a child learns something or when a community learns something, they don't just learn it from the words that people say and the lessons that people give them you know, wagging the finger. They also learn it by what the nervous systems, what the older nervous yeah. systems recoil from and lean into.
Yep.
That's the somatic pieces.
Yep.
So I may not know why mama does these particular things, but I know I need to pay attention based on the way her tone went up or down,
yep.
the way that her nervous system constricted or and over time that becomes decontextualized and decontextualized. Things that become trauma that becomes decontextualized, or things that become decontextualized over time, end up becoming personality, yeah. family traits, and culture. And that's what that article was about. If you get a chance, you gotta read the article. So it's one thing to listen to me in Utah,
yeah.
but I really want to encourage the audience to really read this article and get that book, because it is fascinating.
It's fascinating. And try to pay attention to that flash,
that's
that
right.
initial,
that's right.
what happened, because I can, if it's like mine, it will be to try and dismiss what you're reading quickly,
yes,
because
sir.
It's just not.
And get through it quick.
Yeah, get through it quick. It's not comfortable. The other thing I want to point out is it was, when she was talking about the women who were involved in this organization, these are affluent. These aren't just like, because
right.
I think we have this idea of middle class, blue collar working, especially right. in that time. No, these were very upstanding,
that's
quote
right.
unquote.
That's right.
These were the leaders of their community.
Exactly.
And they
right.
were picked out.
Just for that purpose.
For that purpose.
Right.
They were invited. They were made to feel like they were very important.
That's
they
right.
were upstanding and
that's
smart
right.
and they were the
that's
best
right.
and the brightest
that's
and that
it.
Kind of thing. And,
that's it.
And there's something intoxicating about
that's
that.
That's right. That's right.
And that's
culture is intoxicating,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You have modes of languaging. You have symbol. You have purpose. You have rules of admonishment. You have rules of acceptance. All of those things are very important. And you mean mm-hmm. to tell me all you have to do is be white and that happens? I just think that, you know, this idea that it's only the rural Alabamans who were doing the KKK. One of the things that one of my ancestors used to say is that, you know, the South is, as long as you're south of the Canadian border, you're in South. You're in the South, right? Don't get fooled by just these kind of media caricatures mm-hmm. of what racism is. Understand how that stuff is in the body. Just like you said, as you're reading this article, you may have to read it 3, 4, 5 times before you understand what your body's actually doing to get rid of it,
mm-hmm.
to shut down. You may get sleepy, right? All of a sudden you get sleepy.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Sleepy or mind wandering.
That's
like, this isn't pertinent to me.
That's part of the, protectiveness.
It really, really is. I mean, we always talk about this, is for me, the connection between the cultural community, multiple community traumas, and the interpersonal stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, for me, like this, even though it wasn't obviously directly attacking my grandmother, it still felt like
exactly.
an assault on someone who literally in many ways saved my life at multiple
exactly.
points. And so it was none of this is clean.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like none of this is clean because
right.
we as human beings aren't just kind of clean, and
yeah.
it's so much more nuanced.
Yeah.
And I think especially I can speak for my community, the white community, because
mm-hmm.
that's where I grew up and developed in, that is absolutely a defense protective mechanism
right.
that we use. Like we want things to be clean.
That's right.
We want things to be like kind of cut and dry.
That's right.
And
that's
when
right.
they're not, we don't know what to do with it.
Well, partly because the very structure of this society is built around you being comfortable,
mm-hmm.
right? And the white body being comfortable. So the moment that the white body ain't comfortable, it makes everybody like, right, like, freaky, right? People,
yeah.
people start like, you know, and people of color, what happens when the white body starts to be uncomfortable is that we start to get tagged too, right? Because we know that that means that means something.
Yeah.
That white uncomfortableness and them being uncomfortable literally means something. I mean, it means some type of physical, emotional, social, job, employment, retribution,
mm-hmm.
right? And so this is why you've been around me long enough, I always say white people got to get their stuff together. They have to actually begin to create culture mm-hmm. around what shows up and how they begin to hold each other accountable for those things that show up and begin to actually develop embodied anti-racist practices,
yeah.
right? Not thought. Not anti-racist strategy,
mm-hmm.
right? Not anti-racist informed.
No.
Right? Yeah. Right? Actual practices and culture and a challenging of what is standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to hear you say that, man, that challenged me because I thought of my grandmother. I say, lean into that. Right? That shadow side, the shadow side of us really is where all of the juices are at.
Mm-hmm.
It's where all of the kind of ability to kind of grow and transform. That's in our shadow side. So often what we want to do is we want to chop that shadow side off and not look at it.
Yeah.
But the shadow side is really, you know, you can't have a shadow without having sun. Right. And so you really have to white folks have to really lean into the shadow side, man, because the hidden parts of it, the hidden parts of white folks is what is killing us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's killing everybody. It's killing the planet. And if white folks don't begin to actually like embrace that shadow piece,
mm-hmm.
There is room for self-mastery,
mm-hmm.
but it ain't in comfort.
It's interesting because as you're talking, I'm realizing even in the interpersonal relationship I have with my grandmother, right? She's passed. But one of the things that I'm realizing that I did with that relationship was create this kind of dehumanization of her.
Mm.
Which is, it's kind of this idea I hear it a lot in therapy work that you hear about magical thinking.
Yeah.
And creating my grandmother as this superhero
yeah.
who saved me, who could do no wrong.
Yeah.
And how to, and I'm not like, again, my grandmother was not in the KKK.
And you loved her.
And I loved her.
That's exactly right.
But she was a human being.
That's right.
With complexity and mess.
In this country.
And
she was a white bodied human being in this country.
And so, and she doesn't have to be this dehumanized superhero for me to continue to love her.
Exactly.
That takes work for me. Like, it's one thing to, even as I'm talking to you, that flash.
That's right. Well, I'm seeing your face start to turn red.
It's not an easy thing to deal with,
yeah.
but this is, and again, I go back to this is complex. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is not, the way these things interweave, and you don't, it's also hard to articulate
mm-hmm.
because of the way it interweaves
mm-hmm.
internally
mm-hmm.
and it gets confusing.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of the things I had the most trouble with is the confusion of what was going on.
That's right. Well, this is why I say, me and you have talked about this a number of times on the podcast, is that this is why I say you can't do this by yourself. This is why, like, you going to Rachel's community of practice and doing those things is because that stuff that you're dealing with didn't happen individually.
Yeah.
It happened communally.
Mm-hmm.
So often white folks go, well, oh, that really impacted me and I had this thing. And the only approach that they have to it is an individual approach.
Yeah.
They don't get together with other white bodies and say, let's read this together. Right.
There's a vulnerability to that. That's immense.
But not doing it puts your children in danger. Puts
mm-hmm.
your black children in danger. right?
Yeah.
It puts my children in danger.
Mm-hmm.
White folks not doing that work with each other and surfacing that stuff and surfacing that shadow piece and starting to culturally begin to deal with it puts me in danger. Because let me tell you something, I don't know who's the good white folks and who's the bad ones. If you slide a bucket, this is something that
I would argue white folks don't know if they are the good ones or the bad.
But that's why they need to. That's why they got to do it. You know, Muhammad Ali said this thing once. He said, if there's 100 snakes, and 75 of those snakes are poisonous, but 25 of them ain't poisonous, but they all look alike, right? Would you blame me for not wanting to be around those snakes?
No.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. That white folks differentiating themselves in terms of good ones, bad ones, is about work.
Yeah.
It's about work. It ain't about declaration.
Oh.
I'm a good one. I'm not a racist. I'm this. Okay, it's 100 snakes here, and they all got the same spots on their back. So you're asking me to put my life in danger, mm-hmm. in order to possibly deal with one of the good ones,
mm-hmm.
right? That's an impossible task. And I will tell you, people of color are unwilling to put themselves in that position anymore. We're not willing, and when I say people of color, I'm talking about Black people specifically, but I'm talking about all people. I'm talking about Indigenous people from Australia. I'm talking about Indigenous people here. Can't you understand what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the fact that this idea of whiteness was not only an American construction, but it was also a European construction. It was also this. It had a tremendous amount of utility.
Yeah, I think that one of the things to really think about, especially as you're...
Should we pause this for a second? Because he's got this one.
Okay, right, there we go. Okay. Noah, mark this and edit this out.
Please.
One of the things I look at, or one of the things I think about as we're doing this, sometimes I try to think about, you know, what are people thinking as they're listening to this?
Right. So
I've never noticed that before.
It's never been there. I don't know who's here.
All right.
Right.
No, I'll edit that out too. In thinking about, and I don't think about people listening to this and, you know, liking it or not liking it.
Right.
It's more like, can they let it in?
Can they let it in?
If you are listening to this podcast, which obviously you are, and you're uncomfortable, notice that.
That's it.
Be curious without judgment.
Yeah.
Because judgment it's going to get you nowhere.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, like, from my own personal experience, I want to, you know, judge every
mm-hmm.
emotion, everything I go through. But if you can stay away from judgment and just notice and be curious as to why you're uncomfortable or why you're dismissive, because I'll tell you right now, if you want to dismiss what we're talking about right now, no matter what your color of your skin or who you are, no matter what your sex or your gender or anything, be curious about that.
That's it.
Because that's something that's where the somatic side of this comes into play. Because without knowing the somatic side of this,
right.
you don't know how you're going to react. If you don't know, like, anybody can be a white hooded KKK robe wearing person in a certain situation where they're pulled into it somatically,
right.
Without even consciously knowing it.
Yeah. I would say the other thing in closing that I would say is that I think It's one thing to notice. It's another thing to notice and share it with somebody. It's another thing to notice, share it with somebody, and then write. And what I call soul scribe, right? Mm-hmm. So write on what's the vibe that's coming up for me. What's the images and the thought? And what's the images and thought? What's the meaning? What's the behavior? What's the affect and feeling? And what's the sensation? And each one of those things also have weight. They also have texture.
Yeah.
And they also have speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have to begin to work with though, not just write, you know, well, this was a stupid article. Blah, blah, blah. No. What's the texture? What's the speed? What's the weight of what you're experiencing right now? And then what is the vibe? What's the meaning? What's the sensation? What's the feel? Like, what are those things that are coming up for you that will allow you to over time then go back and read it and go, okay. And if you do that enough, you'll start to begin to see patterns. Absolutely. Patterns, somatic pattern, right? But if you don't do it, and if you don't share it with anybody, if you don't share that with another white body or another body of color, what happens is that it only becomes information and not knowledge. Knowledge is when it compounds, when somebody asks you this or asks you that, why are you doing that? And you notice yourself wanting to go, well, why am I doing that? And then another part of you goes, because this is important, because I don't want to pass this piece down to my children. Because I don't want to have my children pass this down to my grandchildren. And so part of my legacy is really about confronting these pieces somatically so my children don't have to carry this stuff.
Somatic work on this is action.
Is action.
It's not. So intellectualizing, which
good
is
catch.
Everything you're talking
good catch.
About.
Good catch. Yep.
It does no good.
Right.
And again, I go back to my experience working through trauma that just knowing about it does no good.
That's right. You got to do something.
You got to do something. You got to put some things into action. In fact, whenever I have arguments with my therapist,
that's
always what it's
that's
about.
Right. That's right.
Is I'm sitting there trying to intellectualize,
that's
like,
right.
Well, I know all this stuff about neuroscience and trauma. And he's like, that's great. Chuck that out the window and start, you know, he tells me very similar things. Start journaling, start understanding
right.
what is going on
that's
here.
That's right.
Do
something.
Yes. Do something.
That's right. That's it.
And that's what we're trying to do here
right.
in creating a movement, a movement of action and somatic abolitionists,
that's right.
abolitionism.
That's exactly right.
If I could talk.
Yeah.
Awesome to be with you, my man.
You too. You spotted another hour.
Another half hour of Chromatic Elephant. Please bring the elephant in the room wherever you go. And take some action steps to stop the brutality and start changing the world and healing yourself. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Chromatic Elephant. Support for this podcast comes from My Grandmother's Hands and Resma Menekin at resma.com. or text RESMAA to 55222. Support also comes from Thriver Institute, helping organizations in social services, education, and pediatrics find practical and culturally responsive approaches to applying trauma-informed practices. Live to thrive. Chromatic Elephant is produced and directed by Tyler Reitzner and Resma Menekim, with technical production by Noah Brown and Andre Gobert. Thank you for listening, and keep acknowledging the Chromatic Elephant in the room.